need is to feel it. Let it burn through you. Then get on with your life. You are not responsible for any of what happened to your parents. But to punish yourself for having a feeling. Oh, lass, that is wrong. You felt some resentment. There is no shame in that. You are young and full of life. There is no shame in that. Lisa looked as if she desperately wished to believe him. It wasn't your fault. Not the wreck. Not your mother getting ill. Not your being brought here to me. Let go of it. Stand up, Lisa. Take what you want from me. Live now.
Damn you,
she repeated, shaking her head. Feelings long denied now flooded her. She sat still, his words echoing in her mind. Then another voice startled her, because it sounded so like Catherine's resounding in her head.
No more punishment. He's right, you know. Do you think I didn't see what you were doing to yourself? Live, Lisa.
Her hands were trembling. Could she? Did she know how? After years of refusing to believe that anything good might happen to her, could she reclaim the dreams she'd had of being a woman unafraid to love? Her gaze swept over him. Magnificent Highlander. Half savage, yet more civilized than most modern men. Tender, caring enough to penetrate her shell in a valiant effort to wrench her from it. She would never find a better man. Live, she agreed. Without a word, she rose to her feet, suffering the sensation that she was splitting into two different people. As if in the act of rising, she slipped from her 21st century body, leaving the old Lisa huddling on the bed, her arms wrapped around a pillow, vehemently denying her own needs. This new Lisa stood tall and composed, waiting for, inviting his next demand, ready to make demands of her own. Remove your gown, Lisa. Her breath clawed its way from her lungs. I said, remove your gown.
What about you?
This is not about me. This is about you. Let me love you, lass. I promise you will not regret it. Lisa drew a shallow breath. He saw her heart as it really was, full of complicated and less than noble emotions. Yet he wanted her. And in removing her gown, she was dropping her barriers and extending her arms to welcome him, welcoming what they could be together. Her fingers felt stiff and clumsy as they moved over her clothing, but grew more nimble the more honest she was with herself. I want you. I am here for you. I adore you. I adore you. His words lingered, and she acknowledged that she wanted it to be just like this. To disrobe for this man, to offer him her body, to find the approval and desire she knew he felt for her, to reach out and taste what he offered, to turn her willing body over to him to be taught, initiated, savored, to live. Her gown rustled to the floor. Stop. He sat motionless, gazing at her as she stood, pale in the candlelight, in her lavender bra and panties. He made a sound low in his throat. Lisa had never heard a man make such a sound before, but she realized that she wanted to hear him make that sound many times, looking at her in just the same way. Proceed, he said finally. Very slowly, lass. Kill me with it. You know I want you. Use it. It is one of your many powers. Lisa blinked, thrilled to realize that she had such power as a woman. His plaid was lifting, his chest was falling and rising rapidly, and his eyes were dark with desire. He was inviting her to wield her feminine strength, and she wanted to. In her fantasy, she dreamed of just this, being with a man whose attraction to her was something she was so certain of that she could tease him, revel in her femininity, provoke and invite the consequences. Slowly she began to strip away her lingerie, sliding the straps of her bra off her shoulders, tugging playfully, provocatively at the bow between her breasts. When his eyes flared, she slipped off her soft slippers and tossed one at him. The motion made her breasts sway gently. When the slipper hit him lightly in the chest, he swallowed hard and tensed to rise from the bed.
"No. I find I like this. You encouraged me. Let me discover who I am."
Sersin sank back to the bed, but looked ready to launch himself at her at any moment. A scrap of lace fluttered to the floor, then another, and Lisa stood before him holding her breath. She saw herself reflected in the polished mirror behind him and moved a bit to the right. Perfect, she thought. She could now see him fully clothed, his wide shoulders and muscled back, the bed, and herself standing nude before him. It was fiercely arousing, erotic, her desire strangely heightened by the fact that he was still completely dressed. "Turn around."
"What?"
she gasped, nearly losing her composure. His laugh was a low purr. "Oh, you are perfection, lass. But turn around and show me all of your lovely body. I've been dreaming about you for weeks." Lisa swallowed, uncertain that she could do it. She wouldn't be able to see him. What if he thought her behind was fat?
"Men never think a behind is fat," Ruby had told her once. "They're so happy just to be seeing it."
"Come, lass. Show me if your back arches as I think it does. A cool sweep of ivory, with your hair tumbling down it. Show me that beautiful bottom. Show me those long, lovely legs. Show me every inch of what I am going to kiss and taste." His words were more than adequately persuasive. What woman could refuse such a promise? Lisa drew a deep breath and turned. After a few moments of excruciating silence, she glanced nervously over her shoulder, seeking the reflection in the mirror. He had dropped to his knees by the bed and was crouched behind her, looking up and down again. Black eyes lifted to meet her gaze. The expression on his face was wild, possessive, and made her feel that she was the most beautiful woman ever to stroll through his 14th-century world. He lunged to his feet and hauled her back against him hard. The rough fabric of his plaid was arousing against her sensitive skin, and she melted against his body. With a firm tug, he pulled her bare bottom against his hips, and she lost herself in the sensation of the fabric and the hard length of maleness that lay just beneath it. She pushed back, feeling the ridge of him pressing in the cleft of her behind. It jerked against her, and she gasped with anticipation. His hand slid up her waist, over her ribs, and he held her breasts reverently at first, then with rough excitement. Her nipples were already hard and aching from the cool air in the room, and when his fingers brushed them, she nearly screamed. Her hips bucked back, and a flash of pleasure darted from her nipples to where she would take him into her body. He pinched them, and she felt her world spinning, narrowing down to nothing but her and him, and a desire to do everything with him that was possible between a man and a woman.
"That's it. Push back against me. Show me how you want me."
He rocked against her, imitating the thrust and draw of lovemaking, and she felt the wetness between her thighs. Her movements became strained as wordlessly she begged for his body. He wrapped an arm around her waist, bit the nape of her neck, catching the tendon between his teeth. It felt so dominating. His other hand sought her lips, and he slipped his finger between them. She stroked it with her tongue, closing her lips over it and sucking it into her mouth. Gently, he inched her toward the chest at the foot of the bed.
"Sit."
She sat breathlessly, so aroused that even the chest felt good to her aching bottom. Hard. That was what she wanted. Something hard and solid and... him. He stood before her, legs splayed, eyes dark. He brushed her nipples with his palms, his calluses deliciously abrasive against her sensitive peaks. She watched them tighten, fascinated by her body's responses to him. With his knee, he nudged her legs apart slightly, seemingly transfixed by the small, dark mole on the inside of her left thigh. He wet his lips, and she knew he would kiss her there many times. Holding her gaze, he undressed for her, with excruciating leisure, never taking his eyes off her. No modern-day stripper could have competed with the performance he gave her. It had a funny effect on her emotions, that even though she was naked, even though he could have taken her quickly, he was making it as he'd promised, all about her. He was progressing slowly, feeding her every fantasy. He was still trying to woo her, despite the fact that he'd clearly already won her. When he stood nude before her, she closed her eyes, overwhelmed by him. She took a deep breath and opened them again, only to discover him bobbing before her. "It's beautiful," she thought. She'd never realized that a man could be so beautiful. The hard bulges in his abdomen tapered into lean muscles that rippled down to his thighs, creating a V of taut ridges that commanded attention to the raw masculinity that hung heavily between his legs. The mere sight of him made her stomach feel tight and empty. It was thick and long and raising itself eagerly. Olive, pink, smooth, velvety-looking, hooded, with a strong vein running the length of it. It would be warm. No, it would feel hot and silky beneath her hand. Leaning closer for a better look, she was startled when it bobbed again and brushed her cheek. Laughing, she looked up at him and lost her breath. He stared down at her transfixed, his expression so possessive that she gasped. She would never be the same after this night. "Be bold," she told herself. "Be brave and wanton and everything you always fantasized about being. Take from life, Lisa." She wrapped her hand around him, and, as she'd suspected, her fingers couldn't close. A shiver shot through her, imagining her body yielding to take so much of him. He bucked within her grip. A smile curved her lips. She could do that to him, make him jerk hungrily in response to her touch. She squeezed, sliding her hand up and down. This part of him was such a contradiction. So hard, yet the skin so very soft and sensitive. So strong, yet so weak before a woman, so easily wielded by a man as a weapon, yet so easily used as a weapon against him. Lisa licked her lips, wondering how he tasted. Salty? Sweet? Where was her whipped cream? She dropped her head and brushed her lips over the tip of him, just once. A tight suction with her lips, the quick flick of a tongue, just enough to taste him and assuage her curiosity. A bit salty, and a scent of spicy man, she thought, pondering the flavor on her tongue, her hand momentarily still. His spicy scent that numbed her brain was more prevalent here, near the center of his manhood. It did alarming things to her, both relaxed and stimulated her. She glanced up, wondering why he'd gone motionless, and was stunned by the startled, savage look on his face. He drew her up into his arms, swept her back onto the bed, and stretched himself on top of her.
"Lass, I am going to love you until you cannot walk from my bed," he whispered before kissing her.
She responded eagerly, fiercely, molding her mouth to his.
"Slowly, first."
He drew back slightly. With excruciating gentleness, he brushed his lips against her once, twice, a dozen times. She parted her lips against his gentle friction, signifying her desire for more. He laughed softly and ran the tip of his tongue in a playful circle over her lips. He teased until she was moving frantically, trying to catch his tongue with hers.
Place your hands above your head, lass, and if you have a problem keeping them there, I will be happy to use fabric to secure them. He murmured.
What? Do you want to tie me up?
She exclaimed, mildly shocked. She felt his lips curve in a smile against hers. He was amused by her reaction.
I would not be adverse to the idea.
His laughter was husky, darkly erotic.
But for now, I merely wish you to restrain your hands from my body. You need give nothing, do nothing. I assure you I'll be taking my pleasure in the giving.
Lie back and let me pleasure you, he was saying. Have I died and gone to heaven, she wondered, and he prefers to do this? Her fantasy lovers had always been dominant and demanding illusions, who exhausted themselves in bed, giving their women pleasure. Obediently, she raised her hands above her head. The movement lifted her breasts, and he caught one roughly with his mouth. Then she was burning, her nipples were on fire. He nipped and tongued, licked and tugged until her breasts felt swollen and hot. He raised them together and dragged his tongue down the soft crevice. Then he separated them and kissed each nipple. He nipped her stomach and kissed her hips, the very sensitive part where her leg met her upper body, only inches from the soft hair between her thighs. The skin was thinner there, more delicate. He pressed his hot kisses to the tiny mole inside her thigh, dragged his velvety tongue over it, and she arched against him, instinctively guiding him closer to her center. His tongue flicked out to taste her, and her hands flew down to cradle his head between her legs as she arched against him. He tasted her with long, smooth strokes against the sensitive nub, alternately fast, then languid, then fast again.
Oh, God!
She embraced the pleasure. She soared, spiraled, shuddered, and when she fell, he was there to catch her, with promise in his eyes. He slipped a finger inside her, and she contracted helplessly around it. She realized that there was an entirely different sensation she'd not yet experienced. She'd heard that orgasms could be very different when a man was inside a woman, as opposed to an orgasm from external sensation. She could feel just the hint, the promise of the fullness it would offer.
Tight. Too tight, lass. You need to be more relaxed, and I know of only one way to accomplish that.
His lips burned against her skin as he kissed her mole, tongued it, then stroked his velvety kisses down to her ankles, her toes, and back up with delicious slowness. And when he returned, he lowered his head and ensured that she was completely relaxed by sending her over the edge again. Two fingers. The fullness. Three.
Relax, lass. I don't wish to hurt you over much. I am...
I know,
she panted.
You are. I saw you.
She was awed and a little afraid. His hands were magic. Her body eased open, only to contract swiftly when he removed his fingers.
The ache.
Oh, the unbearable ache.
Please,
she groaned. He raised himself above her and positioned himself between her legs. But he didn't enter. Nay, he took her lips with his and kissed her, light and teasing, kissed her deeply, kissed her so hard that his teeth bumped against hers, which she'd always thought might seem clumsy, but it wasn't. It made her nearly wild beneath him. She arched her lower body, pressing against that hot male part of him, and he pressed back against her, hard.
In me,
she cried.
He laughed against her lips. You're impatient, lass.
Yes, I am. In me.
Aye, aye, mistress, he whispered.
He gave it to her slowly. The first inch was a most unusual sensation, and she doubted she could take him. The second inch promised pain. The third and fourth were painful. But the seventh and eighth promised heaven. Lisa closed her eyes and devoted her full attention to the hard man inside her. She had never felt such a pressure, such a completing sensation in her life. She could have stayed like that forever. And then He rocked slowly within her.
"Squeeze me," he whispered.
"What?"
"With your muscles."
When she stared at him blankly, he tickled her suddenly, causing her to laugh. The muscles inside her contracted, and she understood.
"Squeeze like that, you mean?"
He went completely still inside her.
"Squeeze."
It was the most incredible sensation. She could use her woman's muscles to contract on him and release, and every time she contracted around him, it sent her perilously close to the edge. He lay motionless atop her, letting her feel him, grow used to him, develop an insatiable hunger for the pleasure of him buried within her.
"Does it arouse you?" he asked.
"Oh, yes," she murmured.
He withdrew slowly, savoring every sweet contraction of her muscles, then filled her to the mouth of her womb. The night was young, and over the course of it he made a wee bit of progress down his endless list of things he wanted to do with her. Her insatiable curiosity extended into the bedchamber, as he had hoped it would. She was a most willing conspirator throughout the long night of passion-slicked bodies and yielding hearts. When he rose, bracing his hands wide on the bed to either side of her, threw back his head and lost a part of himself deep within her, he nearly doubled over in agony. His muscles wrenched tightly in his abdomen, his heart pounded alarmingly, and his head felt it might split. In all his life he had never permitted himself to spill inside a woman, refusing to have children. First, because he'd not been ready, then because of what Adam had done to him. But he'd laid his fears aside, and this time he let go. And at the precise moment he filled her, he felt a bond flare into life between the two of them, as if a channel had been cut between their souls, allowing a bit of her to seep into him, and a bit of him into her. It burned through his body, tunneling to the part of his mind that held magic. It was like a blinding white heat that roared inside him and exploded in a flash of heightened awareness. It was the most incredible sensation he had ever experienced. Suddenly, he could feel her pleasure, could even sense that she felt grateful to him for helping her forget her pain and making her first time such an incredible experience. He thought, liking this new bond. He had exceeded her expectations for lovemaking. His gaze flew to hers, and he saw that it had been the same for her. But she didn't know, because this was her first and only time of physical intimacy, that such an awareness of each other was not a normal result of lovemaking. Her eyes were huge and filled with wonder. He didn't understand what had transpired in the creation of their strange bond, and he wondered what lasting effects it might have on her. He wondered if perhaps the immortality potion had changed him, so that if he spilled seed into a woman's body, they became linked. There was much he did not understand about himself. And then he wondered no more, but cradled her in his arms and felt at peace for the first time in centuries. Afterward, Lisa lay with her cheek pressed to Sirson's chest, one of his strong arms curled about her waist, wondering at the god who had seen fit to take so much from her, yet give her this incredible man. She'd never known that lovemaking would make her so much more aware of his feelings. It was as if someone had flipped a switch inside her. A dazzling white heat filled her, and suddenly she was able to sense his emotions. Even now, he was worrying for her, wondering if he'd pleased her. It was a strange awareness, a pressure that he was near, surrounding her. She'd never before felt so linked to anyone, not even her mother, who'd carried her inside her body. She vowed to plunge headlong into all the pleasure she could find with Sirson, because one never knew how long anything might last. He could be crushed under a rock while building an addition on his castle. He could be injured in many ways. He might be wounded in battle.
Oh,
it was June, she realized, and the mighty battle at Bannockburn was just weeks away. He couldn't go. That was all there was to it. She could not let him go to war. The way her luck ran, she would get a few blissful weeks with him, and then he would be killed in battle, and there she'd be in the 14th century all by herself. Her fingers clenched around his hand.
"I will not die, lass,"
he whispered against her hair.
"Can you read minds, too, in addition to cursing things?"
she asked, startled.
"Nay, but you were feeling it rather loudly. I know what you fear. You fear being abandoned. When your hand tensed on mine, I surmised where your fears had gone, that I might die too young, as your father did."
He acted as if their new bond was nothing out of the ordinary. It was easier for her to accept because, being untried, she didn't know it wasn't the customary result of tupping.
"But you could die," she said. "There's a war going on."
"Shh." He drew her close and rolled from his back to his side, so they lay facing each other, their heads sharing a pillow, their noses touching.
"I swear to you that I will not die. Do you trust me, lass?"
"Yes, but I don't understand. How could anyone possibly swear that they won't die? Even you can't control that."
"Trust me. Have no fear for me, Lisa. It would be wasted fear. Let's just say my unique abilities include the knowledge of when I will die, and it will not be for a very long time."
She was silent, and he felt a shiver run through her. He knew she was hearing more than his words, was feeling his intent behind them. They had a new awareness of each other that transcended words, as if their souls had become entangled. Via that bond, she was comforted, sensing truth in his words, although she didn't understand the how or why of it. He held her, reveling in their strange tie. He sensed the moment at which she relinquished her fears and relaxed, not merely because she wet her lip and glanced at him provocatively. And what he felt next needed no words. Chapter 21. Adam sifted the grains of time and darted through them to the Isle of Morar. He would relax there for a day or so, ponder the developments, study the potentials, and determine where his gentle nudging might be required. Things were progressing well, and he had no intention of losing what he'd thus far gained. He'd experienced a bit of concern during the time she'd remained in her chambers, grieving, but she had indeed been as strong as he'd suspected, emerging ready for love. And how lovely she'd been in her bath, he reflected with a smile. As his feet hit the beach, he willed his clothing gone. Then he strolled languidly, burying his toes deep in the wet, silky, warm sand. Once, he'd walked on a California beach, nude in the full glory of his true form. Thousands of Californians had been stricken by high fevers that had erupted in public displays of eroticism. He loved being Adam. The sun beat down upon his muscled chest. A tropical breeze licked his dark hair. He was a pagan god, savoring his world. There was no better place to be. Most of the time. In the bay, a ship sailed past. Adam grinned and waved. The pitiful occupants of the ship could no more see the island than they could fly to the stars. The exotic isle simply didn't exist, in the usual sense of the word. But fairy isles were like that, in the mortal world, but not of the mortal world. Occasionally a mortal was born who could see both worlds, but those creatures were rare, and usually stolen quickly after birth by the Tuatha De Danann to minimize the risk. Ever since Mananaan had given his people the drink of immortality, and the compact had been negotiated, the Tuatha De Danann had been exceedingly cautious when treading in the world of man. Still, Adam thought, there were times when even a demigod such as himself couldn't resist. There was something about the world of man that fascinated him, made him think he had perhaps once been more similar to them than he could clearly recall, his memories dimmed by time's passage.
"In what merriment have you been indulging?"
"Evil,
Queen of the Fairies purred behind him. She joined him, her long, beautiful legs keeping pace with his, and guided him toward a crimson chaise that conveniently appeared before them. She sank into it and patted the cushions, indicating that he should join her. She glistened, sprinkled in gold dust, as was her custom. Were he to run his finger down her, it would come away glittering with fine gold powder. He had long suspected the dust contained an aphrodisiac that penetrated the skin of those who touched her, rendering them powerless to refuse her. When she beckoned him intimately near, he masked his astonishment. It had been an eternity since his queen had invited him to share her pillowed haven. What was she up to? As he sank down beside her, she molded her body against his. He exhaled a low rush of breath, the equivalent of a human shiver. She was the queen of the Tuatha De Danann for a reason. Her power was enormous, her allure immense. She was erotic, and many found her frightening. A mere mortal could lose his life in her arms, drained by her appetites. Even among Adam's kind, males had walked away from her boudoir, changed.
"Not to worry, my queen. I have been but passing idle time with Circin."
Unable to resist, he kissed a golden nipple, dragging his tongue across the peak. Aviel watched him, her unusual eyes bright, her head propped upon a delicate fist. She fisted her other hand in his hair and lifted his head from her breast. Her exotically slanted eyes were ancient in her ageless face.
"Think you I know not of the woman?" she said. "You've done it again. How far do you think you may push our limits?"
"I did not bring her through time. It was not my doing. Circin cursed something, and as a result the woman was brought back to his century."
"I see."
She stretched her long, slim body languidly, sweeping the curve of her breasts against him.
"Please remind me. I seem to be forgetting. Who was it that taught Circin Brody how to curse things in the first place?"
Adam acknowledged his guilt with silence.
"Assure me, fool mine, that you had nothing to do with precisely when and where that cursed object was found. You did not perhaps nudge it a bit in one direction?"
"I no more nudged the object than arranged the battle in which it was lost."
She laughed softly.
"Ah, another Adamism, that which confesses nothing, while arrogantly concealing nothing. I have seen her. I went to Brody and inspected her. I find her quite interesting."
"Leave her alone," Adam snapped.
"So, you do have an interest in this, although you conveniently blame it on that Scott Laird."
She cocked her head and regarded him coolly.
"You will not interfere again. I know you've been visiting her in another guise. Erin will pay her court no more. No?"
She raised a hand when he would have protested.
"Amarandub, I compel you thusly. You will leave neither my side nor the Isle of Morar unless I grant you permission."
Adam hissed.
"How dare you?"
"I dare anything. I am your queen, though you seem to forget it from time to time. You pay clever tithes to my supremacy with your lips, but you defy me over and again. You have gone too far. You broke one of our most serious covenants with Circin Brody, and now you dare to compound it. I will not tolerate it."
"You are jealous," Adam said cruelly. "You resent my attachment."
"It is unnatural,"
Evil hissed.
"You should have no such attachment. It is not our way."
"It was done long ago, and cannot be undone. Do not think to constrain me. I will only find a way around it."
Evil arched a gilded brow.
I think not, Amadon, for you are at my side until I release you. My command was clear. Ponder it. There is no weak spot for you to exploit.
In his mind, Adam sorted through her words. Her command had been simple, direct, and flawless. His eyes widened as he comprehended how completely she had snared him with so few words. Most who tried to command him composed lengthy written canons, like that boorish Shahawk Douglas at Dalkeith upon the Sea, who'd written a veritable book. But sometimes less was truly more, and she had chosen her words well. He could leave neither her nor the island unless and until she said so.
But they will sully my creation. I care not. From this moment on, you are powerless in their lives. Amadon Dubh, I take from you the gift of sifting time.
Stop!
Obey me, and cease your tiresome protests.
You bitch!
For that, I take from you your ability to weave worlds.
Adam fell silent, his face ashen. The queen could strip everything from him if she so desired.
Are you quite finished?
She asked silkily. Adam nodded, not trusting himself to speak.
Good. When it is done, I will release you. When they have played out their choices. Now come, lovely fool. Show me you still know how to please a queen, and make it your finest effort, for you have offended me most egregiously, and I shall require much in the way of...
Robert the Bruce was fuming. The travel-stained, weary messenger who stood before him shuffled miserably, awaiting the fatal blow. He eyed the Bruce's sword, knowing that the moment his king pulled it from its scabbard, he would likely lose his courage and dignity and beg, or worse, run.
What was my brother thinking?
I dinna know that he was,
the messenger replied dejectedly.
They were well besotted with whiskey.
Had he been drinking with the English again?
Robert's lips curled in a sneer. The messenger nodded, afraid to speak.
How dare he be the one to determine the time and place for my battles?
Robert thundered. He couldn't believe what the messenger had imparted. His brother, Edward, who was in charge of the siege against Stirling Castle, which was being held by the English, had made a wager with the Englishman holding it. A wager! A drink-induced challenge, and booty far more valuable than Stirling itself was the prize. An admission of defeat was the prize, a full retreat from the battle for the crown. Robert could nearly feel his kingdom slipping from his tenuous grasp. His men weren't yet ready for this battle. He needed more time.
You may be underestimating your men,
Neil MacKilliac said.
I know it often seems the present is not the right time, but perhaps it is.
Robert shot him a furious glance.
Exactly what were the words exchanged?
He demanded of the ashen messenger. The messenger winced and glanced around the dim interior of the Bruce's tent, seeking help. No one came to his aid. Two blue-eyed berserkers watched his every move from the shadows. As if that wasn't enough to make a man collapse in a puddle of fear. He sighed, resigned to further infuriating his king.
Sir Philip de Mowbray, the current commander of the English forces at Stirling, wagered with your brother thusly, if a relieving English army does not approach to within 3 miles of Stirling Castle by Midsummer's Day, he will surrender the castle to you and your brother and leave Scotland never to return. If the relieving army successfully attains Stirling, you will give up your fight for Scotland's independence.
And my dim-witted brother Edward accepted this?
Robert roared.
I?
Robert shook his head.
Does he not realize what this means? Does he not realize that King Edward will gather every troop he has? English, Welsh, Irish, French, supported by every mercenary he can hire, and drive them into my land in less than 2 weeks' time?
No one breathed in the tent.
Does my idiot brother not realize that England has triple our mounted men, quadruple our spearmen and archers?
But they're our hills and valleys, Neil reminded softly. We know this land. We know what advantages to exploit. And do not forget, we have Brody and his Templars. We have the gentle mists and bogs. We can do this, Robert. We've been fighting for years for our freedom, and we have yet attained no decisive victory. It is time now. Do not underestimate the men who follow you. We have 2 weeks to rally the forces. Believe in us, as we have believed in you.
Robert drew a deep breath and pondered Neil's words. Had he been too cautious? Had he been willing to fight only small battles because it wouldn't be such a terrible loss if they failed? Had he unwisely restrained his men from a major war because he feared the possibility of defeat? Saracen had been impatient to war. His berserkers were impatient to war. Aye, and his own impatient brother had wagered their future. Perhaps they were all impatient, because it was time.
Let us summon Brody. This is what you've been waiting for,
Neil said firmly.
I am a lord, said Lulach, Neil's brother. If we prevent Edward's army from reaching Stirling, we will have turned the tides. We will be unstoppable. And if ever the time was now, the time is now. Plantagenet grows weaker in his own country. Many of his own lords will not follow him into our land. I say we face this wager boldly, as a gift of fate.
Robert nodded finally. To the messenger he said,
Get you to Castle Brody with all haste. Command Saracen to bring his men to join us at St. Ninian's Church by the Roman Road. Tell him time is of the essence, and to bring every weapon he possesses.
The messenger expelled a relieved breath and fled the tent for Inverness. Lisa and Saracen explored each other with uninhibited joy, withdrawing completely into a world of their own making. Saracen laughed more than he had in centuries. Lisa talked more, voicing thoughts and feelings she hadn't even suspected lay dormant within her. In this way, they rediscovered themselves, opening up closed compartments that needed the light of day. The two of them roamed the estate, picnicking in the fresh spring air, dashing off to the bothy for a private moment. It was there that Lisa confided to Saracen what she'd seen Duncan doing with Alison.
Did you look?
He scowled possessively.
Did you see him entirely in the blush?
Yes.
Lisa's cheeks heated.
I do not care for that thought. You will not look upon another man unclothed for the rest of your life.
Lisa laughed. He sounded so thoroughly medieval.
He didn't look as good as you.
I still do not care. It makes me angry with Duncan merely for being a man.
Then he erased her memory of the young, virile Douglas against the wall in the bothy. Twice. They spent long nights in his bed, in her bed, on the stairs late one night when the great hall was deserted. She told him about her life, and slowly, haltingly, he began to tell her of his. But there she sensed he was holding something back. Because of their odd connection, she could feel a darkness in him that waxed and waned without explanation. Sometimes, when he watched the children playing outside in the courtyard, he grew silent, and she could feel that peculiar mixture of anguish and anger that she simply didn't understand. The castle staff was delighted with the laird's newfound laughter, and Duncan and Galen beamed when they dined together. Gone were the private seduction dinners.
Sirsen saved that for later in the privacy of their chambers. Meals were now taken not in the formal dining hall, but in the great hall, with an assortment of knights and the occasional Templar. Lisa was slowly and irresistibly becoming 14th century. She learned to love the flowing gowns and tartans, even sitting with some of the women, watching them dye the fibers and fashion the Brody weave. She loved the fact that people sat about the hearth and talked in the evening, rather than retreating to their individual electronic worlds of television, phones, and computer games. They possessed richly detailed oral histories and were eager to share them. Duncan and Galen knew their clan history centuries back and wove grand tales of the many Douglas heroes. Lisa listened and sorted through her own genealogy, looking for a stone to speak of. But who cared if one's uncle was a lawyer? Could he chop wood and carry water? Blissfully, the days and nights unfurled, and Lisa realized that she now understood why her mother had lost the will to live when Jack died. If her mom had felt a tenth of what Lisa felt for Sirsen, it would have been devastating for Catherine to lose her husband. And her mother had lost so much in one day. Her love, her ability to walk, her entire way of life. Lisa attained a new respect for her mother's strength, only now understanding the extent of her mother's loss and the pain it must have caused her to continue living without Jack. Sirsen's strength and love were always curled around her like a protective cloak. She couldn't imagine how she'd lived before without it. The link between them kept her constantly aware of him, no matter where he was. It was never invasive, but she'd discovered, feeling a need for complete privacy while using the chamber pot, that it could be dimmed if she wished. She would never be lonely again. Sometimes, when he was far away, riding with his men, something would amuse him, and she would sense his rich laughter rolling inside her, although she would have no idea what had made him laugh. At other times, she would feel his frustration while he was off with his knights, and without even knowing what he was angry about, she would be flooded by his raw masculinity that roared to wield a battle axe and actively protect his homeland. Via their bond, she experienced masculine emotions and drives she had never understood before, and was fascinated by the knowledge that he was feeling her more tender, womanly ones. It wasn't until she asked him if he knew of a puppy she might adopt that she choked on a deep, bitter swallow of the blackness inside him. They were sitting on the stone bench by the reflecting pool. It had become a favorite spot of theirs, watching some children tossing a bladder ball in the courtyard. A small mutt had plunged into the melee and grabbed the ball between his sharp teeth, and when it had burst against his whiskers, he'd shot straight up into the air, yipping frantically, comically trying to scrape the remains of the skin off his nose. While the children had giggled helplessly, Lisa had laughed until tears sparkled in her eyes.
"I want a puppy," she said when her amusement subsided. "I've always wanted one, but our apartment was too small and—"
"No."
Perplexed, her smile faded. A wave of sorrow engulfed her, radiating from him. It cloaked her in a deep sense of futility.
"Why?"
He brooded, staring at the yapping mutt.
"Why would you want a puppy? The Duna live long, you know."
"Yes, they do. They can live 10 to 15 years, depending on the breed."
10 to 15 years. Then they die."
"Yes,"
Lisa agreed, unable to fathom his resistance. Another wave of darkness and anger surged around her.
"Did you have a puppy once?"
"No. Come, let us walk."
He rose and extended his hand, guiding her away from the playing children. He led her into a thick copse.
"But, Sirsen, I don't mind that a puppy will die. At least I get to love it for the time I have with it."
He pushed her back against a tree and covered her mouth with his savagely. Her breath came out in a soft "humph" as he crushed her between his body and the tree. She was smothered in his emotions, pain, hopelessness, and hunger tinged by a savage need to possess her completely, to brand her with his body. And something more, something that danced tantalizingly out of her reach.
Mine, he whispered against her lips.
What a totally barbaric—
She drew a deep breath beneath the onslaught of his lips.
Medieval, arrogant, warlord thing to say.
And true. You are mine.
He dragged his tongue across her lower lip, tasting, suckling. His fingers dug into the soft flesh of her hips. He crowded her against the tree, pressing her into it. His blackness charged the air between them and infiltrated her, drenching her with his tension. He raised her skirts and slipped his hand up her thigh, abruptly burying his finger inside her.
You are wet, lass, he said roughly. Dripping for me. Yet I've scarce kissed you. I like knowing you walk around ready for me.
He turned her around to face the tree. He shoved his tartan aside and pushed the folds of her gown out of his way, trapping the fabric between her body and the bark. He cupped her exposed curves, spreading and opening her for him. His breathing was harsh, and she gasped when she felt him heavy and swollen between her buttocks. Then, suddenly, he thrust into her. He was too big from behind. Lisa tried to push him away with her hips, but he pushed back relentlessly. She grabbed the tree with her hands, confused by the intensity of his emotions, doubly confused because she was caught up in the maelstrom of his fury. It imbued her with an unidentifiable rage that had no object she could discern, translating into a fierce need to possess, to dominate, to take even that which would, under other circumstances, be willingly given. The only release for the anger was in the taking. His rage consumed her, and she bucked back against him and turned, forcing him from her body. She rammed the heels of her palms against his chest.
I don't understand you!
She snapped, her eyes flashing. Still, his intense darkness seeped inside her, driving her, goading her to release it somehow. His eyes were dark, unfathomable pools, and danger radiated from him. He shoved her back against the tree. She knocked his hands from her shoulders with a swift outward thrust of both arms.
Oh, no! You said I get to be in control, too. Don't think I've forgotten. You do what I want this time.
And what do you want, Lisa?
He asked, his voice dangerously soft. She grabbed his plaid and ripped it from his body. She dropped it to the ground, spreading it with the toe of her slipper.
Lie down,
she demanded, his strange darkness fueling her. He complied, his eyes glittering. Although he'd honored her demand, he was by no means subdued. He was dangerous and deadly. But she didn't care one bit, because his emotions made her feel every bit as lethal. She dropped on top of him and kissed him with all his frustrated rage. She became a wild thing, uncaring that she filled the air with sounds of passion. Her hands cupped his face, and she kissed him deeply, tonguing his mouth, nibbling his lips, shifting her hips so she was astride him. The movement with which she claimed him inside her body was not a gentle one. Their eyes met and locked, and she imagined sparks flying from the sheer heat of it. She felt like a Valkyrie, demanding satisfaction from her mate. His hands swept up and closed over her breasts, his gaze fixed on the mole inside her left thigh. She rocked herself on him, raising and lowering her hips again and again, her palms flushed to his chest, bracing herself, watching the area where their bodies were joined by his thick shaft. He reared up hungrily, suckling her nipples as her breasts swayed above him, his hips thrusting urgently. When he exploded inside her, savage satisfaction flooded her, and she nearly swooned from the intensity of both their emotions. It was overwhelming, and pushed her swiftly past the edge. She arched her neck and cried out. Afterward, she lay on his chest, wondering what had just happened. Had she taken him with his desire, or had he taken her with hers? It was so confusing, so mind-paralyzing, their strange bond. When their passions were high and their bodies sweat-slicked against each other, she truly couldn't see where he began and she ended, because she felt it all. It heightened her pleasure 100-fold.
"What just happened?"
she whispered.
"I think we demonstrated the true extent of our need for each other, lass,"
he said softly, stroking her hair.
"Sometimes need can be a violent thing."
"But what was all that darkness I was getting from you?"
she pressed.
"What did it feel like, lass?"
he asked carefully.
"Like you were furious with something or someone, and almost like you thought I wouldn't be here tomorrow."
He sighed against her hair. His arms tightened around her, and she felt his throat work as he swallowed.
"Time is too short, love. That's all you felt. That no matter how long I might have with you, it would never be enough."
"We have a whole lifetime, Sirson,"
she reassured him, kissing him.
"You have all of my life."
"I know," he said sadly. "I know. All of yours."
"There's something you're not saying, Sirson."
"It's still not enough," he replied. "I begin to fear that only forever will satisfy me."
"Then I'm yours forever,"
she said easily.
"Be careful what you promise, lass."
His eyes were dark.
"I may hold you to it."
Lisa pressed her cheek against his chest, weary from the outburst of emotion and confused by his strange words. She sensed some dark threat there that she wasn't certain she wished to understand.
"Tell me everything about your life, lass,"
he demanded later, as they lay in his bed. He shifted inside her and rocked.
"Everything?"
Her breathing was rapid and shallow. God, but he knew how to touch her. She had never understood being touched until this Highlander had placed his hands on her body.
"Everything. Did you ever know a woman's pleasure before I made you mine?"
"Do you mean, did I ever have an orgasm? That's what we call them in my time. A climax, or an orgasm."
"Aye, did you?"
Lisa blushed.
"Yes,"
she said softly. His fingers tensed on her hips, and he buried his face in her thighs, lapping gently.
"When?"
he growled. The vibration was exquisite.
"This is really rather personal,"
she protested weakly, arching against him.
"Yes, this is really rather personal," he mocked. "And you think to withhold mere words when I'm doing this to you?"
"I was curious. I touched myself a time or two."
"And?"
"And I found a most unusual sensation. So I bought a book that explained it all."
"And?"
"And what?"
she said, feeling embarrassed.
"Did it feel like this?"
He slipped a finger inside her.
"Nothing feels like you,"
she whispered, arching against his hand.
"Did you touch yourself like this?"
He drew back so she could see him. One hand palmed her mound, the heel of it exerting gentle friction. The other he wrapped around himself. She lost her breath, mesmerized by the sight of his hand holding his heavy shaft, jealous of his hand being where hers longed to be. She reached out and knocked his hand away, and he laughed.
"Mine,"
she said roughly.
"Ah, yes."
Later, he began again.
"Tell me everything about your life,"